Moncrief on News Talk.
Is there anything you're not telling me?
Like what? I'm not having another episode? Is that what you're saying?
I saw the drawings of Dylan.
Okay.
Are you still taking your medication?
That's for the question. Of course I'm still taking medication. You see that? I see I shouldn't have told you.
I'm not trying to...
You're getting stressed out.
No, I'm not stressed. Okay. There's someone I can ask.
That is a clip from The Boy That Never Was. Sundays at 9:30 on RT1 and catch up on the RT Player as well. I'm delighted to say we're joined by James Dempsey to tell us more about it. James, how are you today?
Yeah, I'm not too bad. How are you?
Good. So tell me all about The Boy That Never Was.
Well, apparently he was once upon a time. That's the whole point of it, right? So this is RT production, and I would say quite an ambitious RT production. I was quite impressed by what I saw last night on RT1, and it comes from a book by an Irish writer named Karen Parry. That is the pen name of Karen Gillace, I believe is her surname, and has written a number of crime novels in particularly, and she says that since when she became a mother 14 years ago, that really kick-started her, I guess, concern for the welfare of her own children, that it launched in her this literary bent towards the worst things that can happen to people. And in this, we get this pretty terrible thing to happen, right? So it starts with a couple, Harry and Robin, played by Colin Morgan and Tony O'Rourke. When we meet them right at the very beginning, they're living in, I believe, Marrakesh, but certainly Morocco anyway. And they have this like very bohemian, bucolic, like cool, trendy lifestyle where he's an artist and she, I think, works in a hotel or somewhere, and they're living this, you know, great avant-garde life. And one day when Harry is supposed to be watching their son, he runs out of the house as many parents would do doing his messages, shall we say. And unfortunately, while this happens, an earthquake strikes the city and their home turns to rubble. And certainly, I would say the most striking thing about it was how well orchestrated that scene was, because, you know, it involved a lot of CGI and some practical effects, and it was extremely effective. And particularly, I guess, in light of, you know, what's going on in Palestine and Gaza, I was really struck by this, you know, seeing this poor Irish family searching for their son under the rubble. And it's not a spoiler to say they do not find him. And okay, we jump forward several years where the couple are now back in Dublin. Their, let's say, their sepia-tinged life of bohemian excess has become drab, and their haircuts are much more severe and serious, and the lighting is all a bit grey and dark. So we know they're not doing great.
Okay.
And one day Harry is in Pier Street Station, and, you know, that great, huge, giant station in Dublin.
Yes.
And he sees across the tracks a woman with a young boy, roughly of the age that their son would be now. And he becomes obsessed with believing that this is their son. And that kicks off the opening episode of, I believe, 4.
Right. That sounds very exciting, James, may I say.
Yes and no. Right now, what I mean by no is certainly it's a very, like, you know, parts of this were thrilling, and definitely the earthquake scene. I want to say I'm so you know, the writers of this are Joe Spain and David Logan, who adapted the novel. The way it was plotted was really well done, and the way it was directed was extremely effective. But this is really more a character study than an action-packed plot, right?
Okay.
So even what we gleaned from the clip there is that this is not the first time that Harry, played by Colin Morgan, has believed he has seen a version of his son already, right? So in his past already, he has history of having some kind of breakdown after the loss of his son and seeing his son other places before. So already we know there's that.
Right.
But it's really, you know, when I was cutting the clip for this, it was one where there were these seconds and lingering moments of silence, because it's a lot of what's going unsaid, which obviously makes for fantastic radio. What goes unsaid, the best of radio.
Yes.
But all in, I thought it was a really promising start to the show. And like, you know, okay, the weather is pretty poxy today and feeling particularly autumnal, shall we say.
Yes.
And like, this feels like a kind of meaty Sunday night drama.
Yeah.
And I would say of many years of doing TV on the radio, there haven't been that many meaty RTE dramas that I have been, you know, salivating over. And maybe salivating is pushing it a little bit, but certainly a very, very positive start for me.
Yeah, because it's more the BBC, I think, has got a name for itself for the Sunday night dramas. They're often...
Look, they're the experts.
Yeah, right? they're experts, defining. But, very autumnal as well. It's always every autumn there's some new brilliant thing. But I have to say, everything you described there sounds great. I'm very taken by the wealth of Irish writing talent on it. Joe Spain, who, you know, is a fantastic writer. And I don't know if you know the story. Years ago, she was working on Fublucht and stuff, and her husband lost his job. And she wrote With Our Blessing on a kind of just wing and a prayer, and lo and behold, it was published and launched her onto a fantastic career. And Karen Perry, who is one half of it's Karen Gillese and Paul Perry, they're a couple. Same thing, you know, 14 years ago, I think a daughter arrived and they were very taken by the dangers in the world, which does go through your mind. And they're just doing so well. I just can't help but look at that and think, God, an awful lot of Irish writing talent around these days, isn't there?
And a lot of pedigree, and like, and it looks beautiful. Like, it's a really nicely shot, very nicely scored film, or you know, piece of like cinematography. The editing is all very nicely done, and the performances are excellent. I was very familiar with Colin Morgan, the Northern Irish actor, and I think he's a real kind of unsung Irish actor, in the sense that he has been in an awful lot of productions, both on stage and on screen, and is excellent pretty much across the board uniformly. And here he gets to do his native accent, and it adds a certain gravitas to it as well. But Tony O'Rourke, who plays Robin, his wife, I was much less familiar with, but she certainly holds her own in her, you know, like, as in, as I said, this is a lot of lingering shots where things are going unsaid, and a character study between this two pair and this fractious point in their marriage, and, you know, whether their family will survive another go round of Harry thinking he's seen their son remains to be seen.
Right.
But all in, okay. Yeah. Positive.
Yeah, I have to say, I couldn't pick Colin Morgan out of a lineup to tell the absolute truth.
He was Merlin for years on the BBC.
Yeah, that explains a lot. And yes, I did read a bit about him. He's into ethical consumerism. Good luck with that. And has no social media presence, which makes him almost unique, really, in the modern world. So... great stuff. So then, we carry on. News that there is a new Lord of the Rings. I still feel we're only getting used to the most recent Peter Jackson one. I mean, honestly, lads. So let's take a clip of this. The Lord of the Rings, The Rings of Power. New episodes on Amazon Prime Video. Take a listen.
Elrond carries three rings, a means of halting the fading and saving our people.
We will discuss the rings once you have answered the question. Elrond just informed me your companion, this Halbrand, was not who he claimed. Yet you chose to withhold this from him and Celebrimbor. Is it true?
Yes.
Who is he?
He is not what I thought, which is the reason I did what I did.
Why do you dance so to avoid revealing the truth? I will believe you when I no longer see the lie behind your eyes. Now, who is this man?
He is no man. He has been masquerading as one, appearing in fair form to hide his true self. He is so wrong.
So that is a clip from the Lord of the Rings, The Rings of Power. New episodes every Friday on Amazon Prime. James, I was kind of jokingly saying, you know, it's hard to believe there is another one, but I would have thought the Peter Jackson one was fairly definitive. Surely that's done for a long time.
The Peter Jackson one is the definitive one, but the problem, I guess, is greed and corporate corporate longing to have ownership of our eyes in the viewing space and streaming space. So there was a bidding war for the rights to various Tolkien properties a couple of years ago, and Jeff Bezos of Amazon himself wanted to create a fantasy show on Amazon Prime Video, and he himself actually led the negotiating in order to get this. And all in, this is the most expensive TV show that has ever been made and is now back for its second season. Now, it had a rather inauspicious beginning because, first of all, the what Amazon wanted to do was they just wanted to remake Peter Jackson's, well, I mean, Tolkien's original trilogy. And the Tolkien estate said absolutely not. It's been done well before and then slightly worse after that. So all in, no, you have to do something else. And instead they have gone into prequel territory and gone, I don't know, roughly 1,000 years before in Middle-earth lore. My Middle-earth lore is fairly rusty, so just bear with me. But it's about the kind of foundational forging of the various rings, including ultimately the One Ring. And the intention is for it to run for 5 seasons. Now, the first season drew a huge amount of viewers to episode one, roughly 25 million reported by the Hollywood Reporter. But then after that, it was a bit of a disaster because only 37% of the viewers went all the way to the finale episode. And that is quite a large attrition rate for any show. This has now come back for a second season. And as we heard in the clip there, is in more sure-footed territory, right? So the first season, all in, it had a huge sprawling cast, but the main person is Welsh actress Morfydd Clark as Galadriel, played by Cate Blanchett in the movies. And she's this she's an ass-kicking elf, let's put it that way, in season one. But she falls for a hunky northerner,
right.
as many people do in these fantasy series. And unfortunately, he has turned out to be Sauron, the big baddie, right? And all in, this second season started much more confidently than the first one because it had already laid out its chess pieces. The first season had to reintroduce everyone to Middle-earth, get us reacquainted with the elves, the dwarves, the mankind, the evil kind, etc., etc. Whereas this one, and I will say, as someone who watched season one all the way to, you know, as one of the 37%,
well done.
Thank you. I take my craft very seriously. As a woman who got all the way to episode 8, I think, it improved week by week, definitely. Yeah. And here it started very much more sure-footed in the sense that we all know who everyone is. The sleight of hand has been revealed and we can get down to the dirty business of corrupting mankind, elvenkind, and dwarfkind. And that is the case. I will not say that it is a totally enjoyable experience. It's the kind of show that you need to close your curtains for because everything on the screen is so dark that I literally was like squinting going, what is that? What am I looking at here? What is this? But this is the most expensive TV show ever made, which means the production values are incredible. The costumes are absolutely beautiful. The score is fantastic. The scenery in the background is excellent. They went for an awful lot of practical effects rather than CGI whenever they could. So I will say an improvement, but still far from perfect.
Right.
And I would say ultimately whether someone loves this will come down to how much they love the Tolkien lore, because this is made from various appendices and other kind of like footnotes written by Tolkien in the years and decades after publishing Lord of the Rings. Lord of the Rings itself already completely ups the ante on The Hobbit, which is a fairly straightforward kids book, and then adds in all this extra lore into the Lord of the Rings. And like for many readers and viewers, myself included, there comes a critical mass of footnotes at which I check out.
Yeah. I'm amazed listening to this because, you know, obviously there is some Tolkien DNA in the story. That's kind of fairly essential, isn't it?
Yes, definitely.
But is there enough is the obvious question.
I would say for purists and diehards, there is more than enough in the sense that they get to see they get to see realized in front of them all of these things that only have ever appeared on a page and in their own imaginations. Now, whether it lives satisfyingly up to their imagination, I can't think of what I'm trying to say here, whether it lives up to what they envisaged in their own imagination remains to be seen. What I will say I have grown a little tired of that I wasn't as critical of in season one is the version of the hobbits in this are called Harefoots. They're played by actresses. Their names are, let me see, Markella Kavanagh and Megan Richards playing Nori and Poppy. Neither of them are Irish, but for some reason they have decided to give them this like stage Irish brogue.
Really?
And it didn't really bother me in season one, but I feel like whatever their vocal coach was doing in season one was a little tighter than in season two. And I just sort of feel like if you're going to go Irish, maybe just right. Pass an Irish
person. Are we going into Tom Cruise territory?
I don't think we're quite as terminally bad as Far and Away yet, but getting there,
Oh my God. I will say also, before we move on, it seems to me very often when you get these kind of origin stories, and they went for one there on Game of Thrones recently, they don't really have a story to hang it on. And it just seems to be just a matter of time before the whole thing just falls apart.
Well, the problem is we know the final destination, right? As in, we know the outcome of whatever they're leading up to, which means they have to make the journey really, really interesting.
Yeah.
And often they fail to do that.
Well, if Jeff Bezos sits down with you and says he's going to give you money, who's going to say no?
Yeah, I'll take it.
Yes. All right, Jeff. It's going to be a success. Now, to move on to something which I'm much more excited about, Only Murders in the Building has returned. Season 4. I've watched episode 1 so far. Take a listen to this.
Charles, Oliver, and Mabel. This is, well, Charles, Oliver, and Mabel.
I'm Eugene Levy.
I'm Eva Longoria.
Yeah.
I want to say Tim.
I'm Jack Black.
Oh, that's it. Yeah.
I'm not Jack Black.
Oliver, this is Zach Galifianakis.
Oh, yes, Zach Galifragilistic, of course.
Ha! I see what you're doing. People do this. You're trying to between two ferns me.
Between the what?
Okay, look, I might not be a desperate housewife or Mr. Shits over here, but I happen to have started the second highest grossing comedy of all freaking time.
Are you the little boy from Home Alone? What did they do to you?
I'm out. I'm done. That's this.
Listen, I will greenlight your dream project.
Aaron Brockovich, but it's me.
No.
Legally Blonde, but it's me.
No.
Spider-Man, but it's me.
All right, fine. The Aaron Brockovich one.
And I'm back.
That is a clip from Only Murders in the Building, streaming episodes of season 4 every Tuesday on Disney+. Well, James, I hope you're a bit more enthused by this.
I would say I am enthused by this. What I really like about Only Murders in the Building is I think it has gotten stronger and stronger with each successive season. Season 1 came out, obviously, 3 years ago, slightly towards the end of the pandemic, and it was this reuniting of Steve Martin and Martin Short with a bit of millennialism thrown in the guise of Selena Gomez, the kind of pop star and actress in her own right. And I should say, even though I don't highly praise her performance here, she did just win a major award at Cannes, so she obviously can act, definitely. Now, it takes place in this, or the season one rather, takes place in this beautiful New York apartment building called the Arconia, and there's a murder, and these three unlikely friends start their own podcast in order to solve it, and do so in increasingly comic and silly ways. Season 2 is rather more of the same, although it makes much better use of the background characters in the Arconia. And then season 3 is where, for me, it really takes off. So season 3 sees a time jump, and suddenly it's an all-kicking, all-dancing Broadway musical version starring Meryl Streep, who, if we are to believe the recent soft launch of their relationship, is now going out with Martin Short. And All In, season 4, again, takes a narratively brave jump. We have this time the death of Saz Pataki, played by Jane Lynch, who is Steve Martin's in-universe a stunt woman is the word I'm looking for. Yep. Here. Steve Martin plays a kind of washed up old actor who was in this 80s police procedural, and Martin Short is a Broadway producer. And this time around, their story has attracted enough attention that Hollywood wants to turn it into a movie. So as we heard in the clip there, they're being played by Eugene Levy and Zach Galifianakis and Eva Longoria. And All In, what I like about it is, now that I'm more familiar with the characters and they have kind of developed them stronger, the jokes are really funny. This is a really funny sitcom that plays hard and loose with the rules of true crime. I mean, at the end of the day, whodunit is actually often the least interesting part of the show.
Yeah.
And it often seems to end on a surprise. Oh, there's actually an extra killer along the way, or there's always red herrings along the way. The plotting of the mystery is in and of itself fine. But the interplay between the characters, I mean, the chemistry between all three of them is excellent. The understanding of how to use stunt cameos and guest players to the fullest of their ability is unparalleled. And I just think, you know, this season sees them moving to LA and realizing the mystery is actually much closer to home and making their way back to New York. So all in, I can't wait for tomorrow's episode.
Yeah, it's funny. I watched episode one and I absolutely love it. Everything you said there, I agree with 100%. And when it got to the end of episode one, and I was just, as we are all in tune now, waiting for the next episode to arrive, when I realized I had to wait a week, I was actually glad. I felt like I'd sat down in front of a really big meal and I was enjoying it too much. I didn't just want to polish it off. I want to take my time with it. So I'm actually delighted that we have to wait till tomorrow for another episode. I think it is completely brilliant. You've mentioned a few things there of interest. Martin Short and Meryl Streep, that's an actual romance now, is it?
So Meryl Streep revealed, so she'd been going out with, I can't remember what his first name is, but his surname was Gummer, because all her children who are actors in their own right are Gummers. He's a sculptor, and they had this, you know, very long-running Hollywood marriage that was seen as, you know, one of the stable ones, they're going strong. But it was revealed that they had separated and divorced last year, a considerable amount of time earlier, but they just hadn't publicly acknowledged it. And then at the premiere, through the rumor mill that Martin Short, who also was seen as one of these, like, in a great long-lasting relationship, but his late wife passed away of illness. Okay. And at the recent premiere of this, their romance seemed to be confirmed as they were walking hand-in-hand down the red carpet.
Right, because the chemistry between them is fantastic.
It is, definitely. And I will say the musical season is really phenomenal, even just for the quality of the songs. I mean, they're really, really cleverly done and staged and really funny as well.
And just very quickly before I let you go, Selena Gomez and her acting, I can't quite make my mind about it. There's times when she looks like she doesn't want to be there. but then you think that's the charm, isn't it?
Agreed, yeah. So basically, sorry, the school bell is going now.
All right, I better let you go.
No, it's lunchtime. But,
all right.
But what I'll say is, yeah, no, I'm the same. Sometimes I think she really, like, nails it. Sometimes I think she seems a little disinterested. In fairness, she's playing the straight woman to those two very larger-than-life characters. So she has to fulfill that role, and she's supposed to be this kind of slightly cooler-than-thou millennial character.
Yeah, exactly.
All in, improved, I would say, but still the weak link.
All right. Okay, James, thanks very much for that. You better go before you're called hauled back.
thanks
for joining us.
Thanks.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.